Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Thank you, Dave. My goodness, two shows a week. That hasn't happened for a while. Oh, it's so nice to be here. Beautiful day in Baltimore, Maryland, USA. Hopefully wherever you are, it is just as lovely. And it's going to be a lovely show. Ooh. We had such a good time the other day. We just opened it up to all the artists who were talking about their gigs for the summer. Had no idea things were going to get that busy, but it was really wonderful. Had a very, very lively chat room and some inquiries since the show on Tuesday, but now it's a whole different show. We're going to always do that. First Tuesday of every month, open it up to all the artists to call in and say where they're going to play. Today, a special guest, a friend of mine that I love so much, saxophonist, composer, producer, amazing church girl, Corinthia Cromwell. Her Evolution Band and she making waves all over the world. The news that she has is so mind-blowing. I just love it. I don't know what to say. She had a CD release party last year. Kirk Whalum was with her at Mount Pleasant Baptist Church and had a hand in being a part of those festivities. So Chrissy's going to join us next hour. In the meantime, we're going to start things off as we usually do with a classic, Herbie Hancock and Succotash on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Kenny Barron on piano. Kenny Barron. Ray Drummond on the bass. Ray Drummond. Ben Riley on the drums. Ben Riley. My name is Gary Bart. And of course, most wonderful, y'all.
I'm standing alone by the desolate dark in the still and the chill of the night. I see the horizon, the great unknown. My heart has an ache, it's as heavy as stone. Will the dawn coming on make it light? I cover the waterfront, I'm watching the sea. Will the one I love be coming back to me? I cover the waterfront in search of my love, and I'm covered by starless sky above. Here am I, patiently waiting, hoping and longing. Oh, how I yearn. Where are you? Are you forgetting?
Is it doesn't last long enough, just about 3 minutes. Billie Holiday, I Cover the Waterfront, from a piece of work that you need to get because it's got so many of those songs that you have come to know and love from this legend, Canciones, songs in Spanish. Oh my gosh, just so many great ones. And you know, somebody reminded me lately that there's a statue of Billie at the corner of Lafayette and Pennsylvania Avenues in Baltimore. I have to make it a point this weekend to go there and get a picture and post it on Facebook because, man, I just love the idea that Billie Holiday was born in Philly, my hometown. Then she made her way to Baltimore, as I did. So I'm always going to feel that connection. That song, I Cover the Waterfront, was inspired by a best-selling novel by Max Miller back in the day, and a lot of people have covered it, but and a lot of great people, but Billie is Billie, you know what I mean? And just so you know, how about this? I didn't get the connection about this until today. Back when Denzel Washington starred in Malcolm X, the film, Mickey Howard played Billie Holiday and sang that song in the movie. And today, when Chrissy Cromwell comes your way next hour, she will tell you a little bit about being in that movie. Nothing is coincidence. I am telling you that right now. So, yeah, Corinthia Cromwell is coming up at the top of next hour. Let us tell you that the second song you heard was Gary Bartz on sax, live from There Goes the Neighborhood in 1990. The song you heard was Flight Path with Kenny Barron on piano, whose birthday is tomorrow, by the way. Ray Drummond on bass, Ben Riley on drums. Gary played for folks who you know just by a first name, Miles, Mingus, and Roach. He played with a whole lot more and won a Grammy in 2005 for his part in making McCoy Tyner's Illuminations shine. Gary is 71, and he is from Baltimore, and I would love to talk to him because he is sounding a little cantankerous these days, and I love those people. It's just going to be a trip if I can get a hold of him. I'm telling you, I wanted to make this three-song set really old school. And I, as you know, if you've listened to the show for any length of time, know that I love the old schoolers. Herbie Hancock started the set, 72, just turned that age. Succotash from 1963. Inventions and Dimensions, the name of the album. His third on Blue Note. It was recorded in August of 63 and featured Paul Chambers on bass, Willie Bobo on drums, Osvaldo Chihuahua Martinez on percussion. And I'm excited about this because I just found out that Herbie is going to be at the Hollywood Bowl in August, later August, with Cindy Blackman Santana and Carlos Santana and Wayne Shorter, and more to be announced. Man, if that's not incentive to get to L.A., I don't know what is. So we'll keep you posted about that. Yes, we have our special guest, saxophonist extraordinaire Chrissy Cromwell, a.k.a. Corinthia Cromwell, and her Evolution Band, experiencing some true success from Peace of Mind Outside the Lines. We're going to hear at least three tracks from the CD. And we're going to turn our attention to one of these other extraordinary, in our lifetime, aren't we happy to have known her talents, artists. Emily Remler passed away much too soon. What? The year was 1990 that she died at 32 of heart failure. But man, those 32 years were packed, I'm telling you. Listen to her and her inspiration, Wes Montgomery, on guitar here. This is from her East to West CD on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. doggies. That's all I can say after that. Oh, my gosh. After having seen George Benson at the Capitol Jazz Fest over the weekend, especially on the widescreen, there's widescreens like in a few different places, and the place was packed in Columbia, Maryland. To know and to see him on stage and then on the widescreen when you can see up close how much he's sweating and how much he's joyful and how much he connects to the audience, oh, my God, means everything. 69 years young this year, George Benson, love ballad from 1979's Living Inside Your Love CD. And you know what? Those of us who were in attendance were so glad we got the chance to see him because he is off and running to the UK and then Canada and then Spain and then France and then he's coming to Philadelphia. Oh, so he's going to be gone for a few weeks and then he'll be back, I think, in later July or August to Philly. But, man, if you get a chance, please go see him. He just really enjoys playing to people. You can tell he is in love with people and in love with what he does. That guitar is a second skin to him. He's been playing since he was little for tips on the street corners of Pittsburgh. So now, I mean, here he is, and just wonderful as ever. Such a joy to see George Benson. Chuck Loeb, you got it right before George from Plain and Simple from just last year. Also at Cap Jazz with 4Play, didn't see him on Sunday. We could only go to one day because, man, it was exhausting just walking and walking around, walking around. Harvey Mason on drums on that CD, by the way, and Pat Bianchi on organ. You heard both of them on one day right before they were supposed to play at Burke's Jazz a few months ago. Man, it was so nice to be able to talk to both of them. And Chuck Loeb, as far as information is concerned, he is one of those guys. We've been talking about this with a few people very recently. Chuck keeps his Facebook more current now than his website. So if you're on Facebook, make sure you zip on in to Chuck Loeb because he's got all the information about what's going on with him right there. Emily Remler, we heard from East to West. CD of the same name, 1988. Amazing girl. Played when she was 10 years old, an award-winning artist. The great Herb Ellis saw Emily play and was totally smitten. This was after she had been to Berklee. She actually had been a rocker. And then when she was at Berklee College of Music in Boston, she got turned on to Pat Martino, Charlie Christian, and Wes Montgomery, and man, did it change her life. She got to be so good, she was so passionate about jazz, that she worked with Astrud Gilberto, Larry Coryell, Rosemary Clooney. She said at one point about her, "I may look like a nice Jewish girl from New Jersey, but inside I'm a 50-year-old heavyset black man with a big thumb like Wes Montgomery." I just love that. And because she was one of those, I guess you could say, addictive personalities, she ate and breathed and slept jazz. And is the case with many people who are so focused on some things that possess them. She also got involved in drugs, and she got involved in heroin. And I would love to talk to her husband. She was married to Monty Alexander, the great pianist, from 1981 to 1984. He is still alive and well and playing, and I can see sometimes when I see pictures of him that he is haunted by memories, and it would just be nice to be able to pick his brain and find out what drew them together. I know that part of him still misses her. Many people do. My goodness. But just to know that her talent was here for a while and that her music lives on is pretty cool. Just it hurts to know that at 32 somebody leaves the planet. Oh, man, it does. Woo! Kyle Wolverton, we just heard from last week. What a pleasure to find out the surprises from Kyle. Man, and we're featuring a little bit of saxophone because our special guest, Corinthia Cromwell, is coming up at the top of next hour, just about 15 minutes away. And I wanted to make sure we played another Kyle song because we didn't get to this when he was on the show. So we're going to go back to Soul Groove and hear his take on one of the songs that you just love. How can you not have a special love in your heart for the Gap Band's Outstanding? This is a take on that on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Woohoo!
Baby. how things get brighter. Oh, 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 yeah. Things are gonna get easier.
Thank you.
as my friend Lynn Scobie in Oklahoma would say, woo child. Groove Stew from Corinthia Cromwell and the Evolution Band. Woohoo! And I have to tell you, we're going to get to Corinthia in just a second. I have to say this because I promised I would mention this right before that serious jam was the Afro Blue Vocal Band with Commitment. That's from the Sing Off and their Christmas edition. Of course, you know that both groups were on the show last year on NBC, and Afro Blue Vocal Band did such an outstanding job, my God, at the Capitol Jazz Fest on Saturday. And I want to tell you that one of the members of the group, Integrity Reeves, is going to be part of the DC Jazz Festival. She'll be at Bohemian Caverns on Sunday. So if you are a member of Facebook, go to her site, see all about it, or go to my page because I have the information posted. And we heard from Kyle Wilberton, outstanding, speaking of which, from Soul Groove. But let's turn our attention, shall we? Shall we? Because there's so much to discuss. I just want you to sit back and try to relax. Though you're not going to relax because you're going to get energized in just a second. And if you don't mind, we're going to have church a little bit, all right? Now, listen, Christy, would you turn that, turn your volume down just a little bit? Oh,
okay, we're done.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay, baby.
That better?
I think so.
I'm loving it.
How are you?
I am awesome, wonderful, great. Yes, I'm having an awesome, awesome, awesome day today.
I am. You always have. And let me get this properly done because I have said to folks for a number of years now, Corinthia Cromwell is a triple threat because not only is she one of the most outstanding saxophonist that I know, but also vocalist, also composer, and you know your way around production, so make it a quadruple threat, shall we?
Yes, yes, God has truly blessed me. I'm just awed by him for trusting me. I'm really awed by him.
I know
I'm
you are.
And
more than most living people that I know, you know where that gift comes from, so woohoo,
yes.
Girl!
I'm going to try to contain my excitement if I can, but if I can't and it catches on to somebody else, I know, Trish, you're going to catch it.
Listen.
They're going to catch it.
You know what? If folks in the chat room or people who will be listening to the show were a fly on the wall of private conversations that we've had, they would surely catch it.
Yes. Look, when we get on the phone, you and I can go for it and just have an awesome time.
Oh, my God. And it always starts out to be 10 minutes, but it's more like an hour and a half. It is crazy.
Yes. So you leave the phone so energized. And, like you can go on this conqueror where you're like, yes, I know this. Yes. You feel so energized when you get off the phone. So that's just cool. That's awesome.
And you know, the last conversation we had, not the one we had just this morning, but the last one, we just don't know where it's going to take us. This is for sure, because we're laughing like this, but we also cried together the last time we talked.
Oh, my God.
And that was just because we promise you this is the truth. Holy Spirit came down and went, whoa, whoa.
Yes, 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 right up in my mouth. It was like, whoa, it was just joy, you know, it was just admiration, it was just honor for God, and just like humbling to just be like, wow, God chose us. He specifically chose us. Out of all the flowers, you know, that exist out of time, he chose us, picked us out, put us in time for us to meet, you know, just to give him glory. And it's like, wow.
Yep. You know? It was actually our own personal Pentecost. That's what it was.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Well,
yes,
Chrissy, you know what? And speaking of the fact that there are no accidents as far as God putting people together, this is so wild because the other day, it was just really splendid because it was the first Tuesday of the month, and it seemed to be a good idea to have artists call to say where they were going to be for the summer. And man, did you hear who called?
Yes. I was like, oh my God. So do I know a lot of them that called. I'm like, oh my God.
It was nuts. And you know, because the show took on a kind of different flavor, I wanted to make sure that I got our straight ahead folks taken care of in the early part of the show today. So I played Herbie Hancock, early Herbie, and then Gary Bartz, and then Billie Holiday. So, you know what? I did not know. I played I Cover the Waterfront by Billie.
Okay.
And you will remember this because in the movie, Mickey Howard played Billie Holiday in Malcolm X with Denzel Washington, and you were in that movie.
Yes. Oh, my God. That was such an awesome experience. And when I say awesome experience, I mean awesome experience. I will never, you know, I can't even explain the experience of being in that arena and actually, you know, experiencing that. That was my first movie that I did. And it was, I now see why they get paid as much as they get paid, because it is a complete day for them. And then we filmed, when we did Malcolm X, I was in one scene, and the scene that I was in was the scene where he meets Sophia in the Audubon Ballroom.
Wow.
And it literally took us 2 days to film that one scene.
Wow.
And if anyone has known anything about filming, it's you have to do the same scene with the same energy
right.
a gazillion times over and over and over again. And in this particular time, I was a dancer. So, you know, you have to dance with the same energy over and over again. You have to do it 50 million times in this direction, and then they move the camera over 2 feet, and you do the same thing 50 million times. They move it over 2 more feet, and they go all the way around the room. They go all the way around the top and all the way around the bottom. So
wow.
the same scene. Oh, my God. Yes. And it was absolutely phenomenal. It was phenomenal. I would never change it as much as anything in the world.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Can you imagine the focus and the passion for your craft that you have to muster in order to go through the tedium? I mean, it's one thing to be able to act and to be consistent with that energy throughout the day, because guess what? Time is money.
Yes, it is.
So you got to be on game. If you ain't, you out.
Honey, let me tell you something. They told us going into it, listen, we want you to come in. You have to be energetic. You don't have to be great patience, but, you know, that you have to produce this same, for lack of a better word, atmosphere.
Right.
Off of every take.
Wow.
Every take. Yeah. And it's like, really? You know, I was like, yeah, really? But it was like, when I say that, something floored me. And then just to be, because the scene that I was in, I was with Spike Lee and I was with Denzel Washington and that whole crew. And it was just absolutely awesome to see these gentlemen up close and us actually working with them. And then the big band that was there, and it was just awesome. And me being a musician, I was loving the music because the song that we danced to was Flying Home. And that, I don't know if you know that song, it's like high in it. And so we had to do the, you know, dancing. And, I mean, it was like, you know, back then it was like the jitterbug and kicking high and oh, my goodness.
Oh,
I was
my
in
gosh.
Version. I could get my foot up there. Close to my head.
Hey, look, let me tell you something. I have seen you in action. I have told so many people about that story because you and I backstage – Wayman Tisdale and Marion Meadows,
yes.
and the Evolution Band was opening up for those two acts, and people were buzzed more about you than they were about anything else, because all you saw was this Energizer bunny wearing a dress and playing a saxophone, jumping up and down on stage, and she tore the roof off. My God, what a night that was.
that was a powerful night for us. It was so powerful of a night that night. The energy, the atmosphere, just the love that, you know, the city of Baltimore gave us.
Oh my gosh.
I know there were some people there from Virginia and D.C., and it was so much love that they gave us that night. I was humbled, and I was just like in complete awe of what God had done, you know.
Well,
and Wayman and Marion received us so great. You know, they sat and talked with us in the room. We laughed and kicked it in the back, and it was great. It was actually awesome.
Oh, Wayman Tisdale loved you. He thought the world of you. You really impressed him that night.
Wow.
Yeah, you did.
I was absolutely awed by him.
You know what? You always wonder about God's plans for folks. And the silver lining with Wayman is that even though we miss him so much, because when he was around, you just couldn't help but be a better person because he was standing next to you.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
He was all about God. And the silver lining, the only one that is not having him, is that those of us who had met him are absolutely committed to make sure that that spirit gets carried on, you know?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. He was just a big bundle of just, you know, there was this joy that exuded from him.
Yes.
Just joy. And I thank God, you know, that I had a wonderful time, you know, an opportunity to meet him and to talk with him, laugh and joke with him, and just be encouraged by him as well, you know? So it's like, and as, you know, as musicians, he just was, you know, it was just like,
yeah.
It was amazingly cool. Yeah, so.
Well, going back to movies, let us mention that you were also in Head of State with Chris Rock and Boomerang with Eddie Murphy. How did this come to be, by the way, Missy?
Woo, honey, let me tell you. That one was great. We actually filmed through the night. I can't remember what year it was, but I remember we filmed. We came in
through the night.
We came in on the afternoon of a Thanksgiving Eve. I'm trying to remember what year it was. We came in the Thanksgiving Eve when we started filming at 4 in the afternoon. We were in New York, and we filmed through the night. All the way until the next morning, we took maybe a few breaks here and there, not long breaks, but filmed straight through, because they had to do it. And the scene that I was in was a scene where he was in the restaurant with Grace Jones, who, by the way, was immaculately beautiful. The camera does nothing for her. Oh my gosh, she was immaculately beautiful.
Wow.
And Robin Givens. It was like, just looking at Grace Jones and the color of her skin, it was like, wow, you know, beautiful. But I'm in the scene where they're in the restaurant, and Robin Givens had shared, you know, with, you know, the character that Grace Jones played, you know, how well-versed the character that Eddie Murphy was. And she's talking about, you know, she's using the vernacular for the word of a cat. Yes, I'm in that scene.
Oh, my gosh. I have to go back and see because I never saw the movie all the way through.
Oh, my God. You've got to see it. So we're in this movie, and it's like, well, what you just need to react to, you know, the words that Grace Jones is saying. And so she's saying her line, you know, whatever. We're just sitting there like, we're like flabbergasted, like, you know, oh, my God. But that whole experience, it was because you had to do an expression that would replicate a sound, if that makes sense. Like, we had to do an action that replicate our surprise but yet disgust at the words that Grace Jones' character was saying. And it had to be authentic. And it was just like, if it wasn't authentic, and later comes with, no, we need to be more disgusted, more shocked and surprised. And it's like, well, how much more shocking surprise can I look? You know, so that's to be exaggerated that it comes off. And it was just so awesome because at the time I had an agent when I was living in New York. I had a different agent when I was living in New York. And when he called me for the gig, he said, hey, you know, at this gig, you know, movie, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, and he gave us all of the, you know, the do's and don'ts of doing the movie. And he said, you know, didn't tell us when we were going to be filming. So literally I left work, went straight from work to the set. So I changed clothes and went to the set. You know, did hair, did makeup, did all of that. And then after we got that, then went straight to the scene that we were filming. It was, again, one scene. But from Thanksgiving afternoon all the way to the morning of Thanksgiving morning, we filmed that same scene over and over and over and over and over again. They did it in French because I believe the topic of Grace Jones spoke French. They did it in French. It was like the same scene over and 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 over again. And I said, Lord, this is definitely an acquired, you know, job.
Seriously. Yeah.
Just, you have to come energized and energetic.
And see, you have to be ultra disciplined.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You have to be. You have to be. And we did some other things. My things that the one I probably got getting cut on the, you know, cutting room floor. But it was just the experience of doing that day
right.
in the city of New York and meeting them and being able to interact with them and see how they actually do the film, you know, and all that comes into play and putting that together, you know, the number of people, you know, from the cameraman, the grippers, everybody. And then me at that time, I was very inquisitive. So I'm like, well, that's who I was. And they actually spent time talking to us on our breaks as to what they were doing and
oh,
how
nice.
They were doing it. So I learned a tremendous amount about film, you know, being able to be in that arena. And then again, and appreciating, you know, what actors do, you know, what extras do, you know, that kind of thing. Actually appreciating what they do, how the extras bring on the realism along with the actors for the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Having to reproduce shock and, you know, and discussion over and over and over and over and over, and over again, you know. And
right.
Then, as they put the film together and have to go back and choose, but they have to look through all this footage and choose the best shot for everyone involved in the shot.
Man.
That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. But it was absolutely awesome. And I think my agent was excellent. I was with an agency at that time, and they got me doing, I had did print work, you know, commercials, magazine print work, and I had those. And then right before I left New York, I had got a call from Martin Scorsese to do a movie that he was doing.
Wow.
Unfortunately, the movie got put on the back burner, but I wasn't able to do it before I left New York. But it was absolutely amazing, just the experience of being in that part of, you know, the entertainment industry and seeing that, being actually seeing that working. So it was phenomenal.
You know what, Chrissy?
Yeah.
I don't think we ever talked about this, but back in 1984, both T's dad and I were extras in Violets Are Blue with Sissy Spacek and Kevin Kline.
Yes, oh my God.
Yes, and
wow.
The storyline was Kevin Kline was editor of a newspaper in Ocean City, Maryland, where we were living, and Sissy Spacek was highfalutin, and she came back into town to visit her parents. Well, you know what a thrill it could be if some of the casting people come over to you, as they did to me, and say, you know what, we'd like to use you crossing the street at a pivotal scene when a bus pulls in. So the action was going to be on me. Do you know... I was so excited. I was crossing the street and a seagull pooped on my head.
No.
Yes. It clearly did. They had filmed this and everything, and they thought maybe we shouldn't be using this girl at all.
Don't they know that was blessing?
Okay, sure. And we were standing there for hours and hours, and then after hours and hours, you know, getting all excited, and then having the eagle poop in your head, getting that stuff out of your hair.
Yes. I guess the seagull was like, I'm going to have my clothes up one way or another.
Exactly. Right. The doggone seagull, one of the little piece of the action,
yes,
in that film.
Oh my gosh.
I know. It was crazy.
That was funny.
So
that was
you,
awesome. Yes.
I mean, you were in New York for a while, and you had,
yes,
said to me some time ago that you had some folks who were sort of mentoring you, because honestly, and we're going to get to what's happening right now because it's really exciting,
yes,
with Peace of Mind Outside the Lines, but how did you make the transition from New York back to Baltimore?
Well, let me say this. I went to New York because I've always loved jazz. And I was in the jazz band at Howard University. I was playing baritone saxophone then. And while I was there, my mentor, Winter Marcellus, he came to Howard to play. And when, you know, the concert was with him, and actually Harry Connick Jr. was doing a performance there on the campus. And then one day we were having, I think it was a rehearsal or something at the college. And Winton came and gave me a card, and he said, "When you graduate, I want you to come to New York.
Wow!
You know, if you want to pursue your music, come to New York." And so he was the person that got me to New York, and just introduced me to just musicians, and you know, they got me into the actual, for lack of a better word, the arena. And I've never forgotten that. He deposited so much into me and telling me to learn the history of jazz and of music, and, you know, and apply that to your life and apply that in how you approach the music. And so he was instrumental in that. But as I was in New York, you know, I was having an awesome life there. I was performing in front of thousands of people, you know, both on the stage and in churches. And one day I was performing at this, I don't know if it was a church or, I think it was a church, and this woman came to me and she said, "I have a message for you from the Lord." And I was like, Now, you know, I normally, you know, you can't receive from everybody. But
right,
the Lord definitely sends you a definite message, and he confirms it by revealing things in your life that only he could have known, you have to listen. So she came to me, she said, "You know, the Lord has need of you. And he needs for you to come back to Baltimore to fulfill, you know, this need." And I'm just like, okay. And so this woman goes on and she begins to tell us. She said, "You know, I know you perform in front of thousands, maybe millions of people every day." She said, "But at night, you go home and you cry yourself to sleep."
Oh, wow.
And that was going on with me. I did not know why I felt this emptiness. Now, mind you, I was dating, you know, I had a mate at the time, you know, I was making money, I had a wonderful place to live, my career was like on an upswing, you know, I just had received a call from the camp of Martin Scorsese, and it was like, wow, but I was going home each night after my show and crying myself to sleep.
Oh, my.
The only God, and I knew that, that was it, just God, and I knew that. And then she said to me, "And the Lord has called your name twice." Now, some people, if you're a non-believer, you may believe that, she may not, but she said, "The Lord called your name twice," and I can recall the two times that God called my name, and he said, "Lord, that he'll call you by the name that you're familiar with." And I remember one evening I was in my house. I'm just sitting here watching television, and I hear my name. I get up, I'm walking around my house. I'm like, okay, I know I heard my name, but, you know, I just played it off and just said, okay, it was me. And then a month later, I was in my car driving from work, and I hear my name again in the car. Okay, now I know I'm the only person in this car. So when she said that to me, that God called my name twice, I knew that that was from the Lord.
Oh, my.
He didn't come back to Baltimore. That happened in August. By December of that year, December of 1998, I was back in Baltimore. You know, I was here. So God had made a way. I found a job, found an apartment. He had put everything, you know, lined up everything. And I know from the experiences in my life and your obedience to God, he had put everything into motion for you. He lined everything up for me. I had no excuses. No excuses. And, you know, that was one of the greatest decisions in my life of my obedience to God, because in that time, I've grown closer to him. I have this intimate relationship with him. He confirmed some things in me that man was not going to be able to confirm.
Mm.
You know, no man on this earth was going to be able to confirm what God confirmed in me. You know, that would plant my feet securely, you know, on this earth so that when he called me to do what seems like to be the impossible, I could do it with no hesitation. And when you get that type of instruction from God, you can't wait long. And, you know, this project, including up to peace of mind outside the lines, because this project is unlike, you know, any other project that's out there.
That's for sure.
You know, it's unlike anything. And in my logical mind, I said, God, I would never put this kind of music together. And what I mean by that is this. You know, I'm working in the music industry. You take a style of music, and that's what you're known to be, you know, a clinician in, whether it be jazz or gospel or reggae or funk or country or whatever. But Peace of Mind Outside the Line is a collection of music gathered from the jazz arena, from the gospel arena, but has mixtures of funk and reggae and old gospel, you know, old down-home gospel, and neo-soul gospel. It's a collection of that because God wanted this project to appeal to the heart of every man. And so his command to me was, if I be lifted up from the earth, I'll draw all men unto me. And see, in this project, it draws, you know, every man, you know, that's drawn to it. Just last night at our gig out of Druid Hill Park,
yeah, how'd that go?
Oh, my God, it was off the chain. Off the chain. But let me tell you, it was so awesome to have just, you know, just people from all over just coming. But the one thing that actually blew my mind was the first song that we did, this young baby, he probably was a one and a half, little boy, Caucasian little boy, came over to the stage with his dad. It was his dad or his granddad. I guess it was his dad. And he stood there, and that little boy started bouncing to the music. And they were like, oh, my God, I was absolutely floored. He stood there at that stage, and he just bounced up and down. He shook his little butt. I can just imagine his little pamper was just a-moving. Little blonde-haired little boy, he was so adorable. And he stayed there for a good minute, about two or three songs, just dancing.
Oh,
and
my
I'm like,
gosh.
Surely, if the music can affect this little boy, who probably has never been, I don't know if he's ever been introduced to jazz or not, I don't know.
Right.
But this little boy is dancing. He's bouncing up and down, and he's twisting from side to side. You know, at that point, I said, God, my job here was already done.
That's
I was
awesome.
Able to affect this little boy. And then I look around the audience, there was just generations of people. You know, matured people, younger folks. There's one young guy, I don't even know his name, but we're sitting, he's right there in the front, and he's dancing. He could have been no more than maybe 17 or 18, but even the music appealed to him. And then I had some matured folks in it, because I don't like to use the word old. friends there. And they were, you know, loving the music, and they had blankets out, and we just had an awesome time. And we played songs from the CD, and then we did songs that I just like. I love you know, different artists. But we did a song by Tina Marie. I love Tina Marie.
Oh, yeah.
So we did an instrumental of her song, Square Biz. Love that song.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, I just loved it. We did an instrumental of Kim's song, On My Mind.
Hey.
See, for me, I like to take titles of songs, you know, and turn them around towards God. It's like, God, you are on my mind, and I'm on his mind, you know. He's so intimately careful and loving to me that I'm on his mind, and he would choose me. So we did On My Mind by Kim, and then we did a tribute to Chuck Brown, you know.
Kim, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yes. And so the only person that we didn't get to that we wanted to get to was Tina Marie. I'm sorry, was Whitney Houston. But it was just so awesome, and it felt like a big old cookout, you know, in Blue Hill Park. You know, and I'm smelling the food, the fried onions and the green peppers. I was like, whoop, yes, that's kind of good.
And you kicked that Jazzy Wednesdays off, and did you get to see the mayor introducing you? Was
yes.
the mayor of Baltimore
yes.
introducing? Good. Okay.
She came and just as elegant, she came up. She talked about the history, because my understanding is the conservatory was named for her dad.
Oh.
Yes. So I guess within the last few years, they named the conservatory after her dad, which I think
that's wonderful.
Yes, absolutely. Just awesome. And so she talked about that history of it. And then we were able, and when she introduced us, we were able to give her a gift of the CD and one of our hats as well, that we have hats for this CD that says, Speak Life Over Yourself. And that's one of the tracks on the
CD. I love it. Love it.
Positive song. Oh my God, love it. But to have the daughter of the man who is now named for this garden, I mean for the conservatory, is just absolutely phenomenal. I mean,
and how about that? And she is the mayor of Baltimore.
Yes, she is the mayor, and I just think I'll forget just that opportunity. And she introduced us, and we were able to, you know, plant a seed and give her one of our CDs or one of the hats. And she said, yeah, I have bad hair days too, because I know some of the women, you know, our hair, we don't want to cover up our golden locks. But
look,
some days, yes, too.
Don't get me started. Sister Child just
yes.
went to the hair salon yesterday and
right.
was there for a few hours because I was starting to look like the old gray mare, okay? And I wasn't what I used to be. So I got a little changed over, and now I feel like Cynthia Lennon from Carnaby Street in the Beatles era in the 60s. You know what? Hair is a wonderful thing. I mean, who knew that hair could make such a difference, right?
Yes. Our crown and glory. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
It is. I think the Lord that I have the sisters that are hairstylists, so they make sure that my hair is tight. You know, and oh my God, I'd be like, I call them up. It's time to get the air done. My air busted. Let me try to get the air done.
Well, I'm glad whatever your hair situation is, it's working as long as you can play that saxophone. Can we play
yes.
another track? You know I've got
yes.
three right here, and I had to keep in the mix. We can do it afterwards, but I just wanted folks to know that one of the people on your CD was Cyrus Chestnut, and he's playing out tonight for the D.C. Jazz Festival.
Yes, he is. Yes. Oh, my God. He's an awesome. Oh, my God. I absolutely
isn't
love
he?
Him.
Oh,
he's
my God.
He's a sweetheart. You know, let me tell you, playing with him, I think you had talked about it before when we was on Cool Jazz Conversation.
Yeah.
I called Cyrus up on a humble. Just, you know, I didn't know whether he was in town or whatever. I called him. I said, you know, he's out here in town. And I would love him to come and be on my project. So it wasn't planned for him to be on the project. I called him up. He was like, yeah, no problem. You know, because we had played together before. And Cyrus, actually, he and I, the year that we first met, we were playing over at, I can't remember the name of that jazz place, over there on the near Morgan State. I can't remember the name of that place. Anyway, we played there. And I was in New York already. Cyrus here in Baltimore. And I was like, man, you got to come to New York. You've got to come to New York. Next thing I know, he's in New York. He is blown up. He's just playing everywhere. But we,
yes.
from the time that we played at that, we locked. So when he came in, we came into the studio, there was no practice. It was just John Grant from Secret Sound. He just turned it on and just said, y'all just play.
Oh, my God. Really? That's how it worked?
That's how it went. That's how it went. There was no, it's like, we're doing this song. He said, what key are you doing? That's the key we're doing in. John just turned it on and we just played it.
Man, that is
wow! Isn't it the power of music? Oh my God!
Yeah,
the power of music.
And isn't it a big fat blessing when you are able to connect to another musician like that, so
yeah.
that you know intuitively that
yeah.
you have such respect for each other, and there's this other thing inside of you that you were always supposed to play together.
Yes. Yeah. That's what we said to one another. We were supposed to play together, and it was just our spirits, just passion and love for this music. Our spirits just said, "Wow,
man!"
And a lot of people know Cyrus is, you know, is a God-fearing man as well. And we did two tracks on the CD, which was "Tis So Sweet." We did that one, and we did "Nature Boy" together. And Nature,
oh yes, yeah.
Yeah, he took. You got to play that one. He took that. Let me tell you, he went from stride piano to just, he went everywhere, and it was like it took everything of me not to be screaming in the studio while we were recording this, because he just like took it. It was like, oh my gosh, it was awesome.
Well, you know what? We had talked about what you wanted to have played, but I thought, okay. We're going to certainly do three songs, but I thought I just can't leave the show without Nature Boy. Do you want me to play that now?
Yes, that would be awesome.
Okay, wonderful. Well, this is our wonderful guest, my friend, Corinthia, a.k.a. Chrissy Cromwell, and her Evolution Band from Peace of Mind Outside the Lines. But this is real special because this is Corinthia and Cyrus Chestnut doing that classic Nature Boy on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
Oh my God. Then this touch just, oh my God, I'm telling you, just when I listen to him play, just, he has such a touch. I mean, you hear him doing the straw piano, you know, and then like the beginning of the song is just this tender intro that kind of sets the atmosphere. Then
yeah, it's but
in the show, but it's like, ooh.
Do not discount what you are able to do together, because
yeah.
honestly, you two seem to have a sense. I mean, first of all, you both love God so much, and you almost have to play a song like that.
Yes. Oh, my God. Just I always tell people that musicians, we share a conversation when we play together. It's a musical conversation.
Yes.
That we're just conversating with each other. Like, one person will make a statement, and the rest of the band is like, mm-hmm, yeah, right. You know, it's kind of like they're supporting the person that's leading. That's they're like, yeah, you are, I agree. Mm-hmm. So it's like a conversation that musicians have with one another that creates a message. And when your heart is writing, you know that you're doing it for God, regardless of what type of music you do, whether it's gospel, R&B, funk, reggae, country, you know, if God is your focus, then you're having this conversation with him in music, and God gets pleased.
Yes.
You know, one of the songs on the CD is called Sam's Jam. A lot of people
yes.
think it's because they're like, who's Sam? It is not about a man named Sam. But I took that from 1 Samuel, the scripture 1 Samuel. Because in 1 Samuel 16, it talks about Paul calls for a minstrel. He had an evil spirit on him that was put on him by God. There was an evil spirit put on him. And Paul called for a minstrel to come and play. And the minstrel he called for was David. And it said that David came and played skillfully. And as he played, the evil spirit that was put on Paul was lifted. Now, it was because of the fact that David's heart was with God. It also did not say that David played sacred music. All it said was that he played skillfully.
Yes, right.
And that his heart was right with God. You know, he had God's heart. And because he had God's heart, the evil spirit that God put on Paul was lifted. How powerful is that we can play and remove a spirit, an evil spirit, off
That's
of
right.
us?
That's right.
Think about that. That God
wow.
is so pleased by what we played that God said, I will remove, you know, this heavy burden off of this person. And that's what we do every day. When we get up on the stage, when we sing, when we play, we take the heaviness that might be on a person, and we remove it. We create this atmosphere that, you know, for that moment and then beyond, that there is not this heavy burden that's upon us. That's our purpose as musicians.
Well, thank God you know what the ultimate is in your purpose, because there's, you know, nothing sadder than somebody who doesn't grasp that, because once God has put into place that you get the knowledge that what you have is a gift, it means the world of difference when you play, because when you recognize that what you have in the way of your instrument or your voice is a gift, then that takes away the narcissism of playing. That means you have the ability then to heal.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes. Yes. Yes.
When you are just playing for the sake of hearing yourself play, it's empty. It's emptiness.
It's just empty. And you can play a million notes, and it still means absolutely nothing.
You have no connection to anybody but you. So what are you giving people?
Right. Am I touching the heart of, you know, a man? Am I touching God's heart when I play this? When I say, God, I want to please you with, you know, this collection of tones and melodies and harmonies and beats. I want to touch your heart with this. And the minute you touch God's heart with it, then God will begin to touch. It'll rain out on everybody else. When we play, I always tell people this, you know, when we play, it's between us and God, and everybody in the audience, they're just eavesdropping on what we're talking with God. And if they eavesdrop on our conversation, our musical conversation with God, they begin to get blessed. Because God is just pleased by it. He's just like, yeah, you know, God is loving it. You know, and it's because our focus is on Him. You know, and then you can play. Let me tell you, you can play four notes, and those four notes can bring about a change in you. And I'm going to give you an example. See, a lot of people don't believe this. And I think because it was for me. When I was a young kid at school, we watched this movie in school. We watched Jaws.
Yeah.
And you remember that on Jaws, whenever Jaws came around, it was thought of as, no. So, and you knew something was about to happen, right?
Right.
So you get, hey, oh, my God, something's about to happen. Oh, my God, something's about to happen. Yeah, those two notes changed and created something in us. It's excitement, whether it's fear, or it built up, you know, like, two notes.
How about that, yeah.
You know, and if you were to hear those succession of notes today, for those of us that saw that movie, you hear it. You'd be like, oh, my God. Or if you hear the, you know, remember the theme music for the Warner Brothers cartoons? Bum, ba, dum, bum, 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 bum.
Yeah.
Remember, you really start thinking about that cartoon in a fun time in your life. Those notes.
That's
how
right.
Those notes. So you can combo notes together, and it will change the atmosphere. Like,
oh,
wow.
Yeah. And it's so funny that you should mention Jaws because, honestly, I had this idea for a while, but wouldn't it be really cool? This is completely different from the subject. Wouldn't it be really cool if you had, like, a party and you got a specially installed piece of music, strategic time? Somebody goes into the guest room. They have to go to the bathroom. And when they sit down on the toilet seat, the theme from Jaws plays,
I just, you know, running around the bathroom, head down my knees.
Oh, man. Can you imagine? And, you know, it's a shame that you can't take pictures of somebody in the bathroom when they have that experience happen to them.
Yes.
But that is so true. God.
I remember when I heard it for the longest time. I'd be like, when I sit on here, ooh. You know, I jump. I look around. Oh, my God. I'm like, no, nah, I'm nowhere near, you know, water. But that's them two notes. I'm looking around for jaws. I'm like, where are you at? I'm looking
that's
around
right. For
the
start. That's right.
You know, but it's just those notes. Just created an atmosphere in you. Like even with, you know, with Whitney Houston, when she sang her song, if I should stay, oh my God. Oh my God, just that. Just those notes. Oh my God.
And then at the end, the pause.
Yes.
And my God.
Right. Oh, my God, yes. This is beautiful. The atmosphere that you created with the notes that she sang and how they culminated. But that music does what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to change the atmosphere.
That's
and
right.
So when I did Peace of Mind, I didn't want it just to be one, you know, one style of music, one, you know, whatever. The way that God strategically gave it to me was that it was like listening to the radio. You're not even to the radio. You don't hear, you know, the same artist back to back, back to back to back. They'll play this song, they'll go to this song, they'll go to this song, they'll go to this song. So that was the idea behind Peace of Mind, was that it's like listening to the radio. So the first song, All Things, you know, comes out, it's kicking, you know, funk is kicking. So the next song is a contemporary, you know, Christian song that you can just kind of groove to. Then the next song is straight down home gospel, like what I call, you know, a Christian, you know, what do you call them? Juke joint. You know, I can come at the piano, you know, when I'm old, up my piano. You know,
yes.
You know, down home, and someone coming up, or someone coming outside with a bucket, some water, and a washboard.
I love it.
You know, and it just and it takes you to those different places, and then it goes on from there, and it goes on to you know, the Great I Am, which is like rock, contemporary rock, you know, Christian, like wow, rock music, and then it goes right into the, you know, the reggae, you know, speak like over yourself. So they can literally listen to the entire CD as if they listen to the radio, and it's gone from, you know, genre of music, still, you know, glorifying God, genre of music. And then when you get to All I Need, which is the last cut on the CD, it's like it's a smooth jazz, you know, neo soul kind of groove, and it's just smooth. You're seeing the car just, you know, driving, and it's just like, it's a nice cut. And now we wanted songs that people could also listen to in their car. So as they're driving home and they're stuck in traffic, because I know when I used to work, I'm saying this brain, oh, Lord, I just
yes.
Sit in traffic sometimes 2 or 3 hours. And you know,
that's right.
That you can kind of, you know, sit and not be angry about having to sit in the traffic, you know, for an hour or hour and a half. And so we created songs that were just music, no words, that, you know, at that time when you're sitting, just have people look out and just meditate, just start thinking. And that's why I love William's song, In Flight.
Oh, yeah.
That was the purpose for that song, that you would just be either in your car or in your house and just kind of sit there and just be thinking. Because it's like a repetitive melody over and over.
And it's so cool because, you know, you're aware of this, or if you're not, I'll tell you, because in radio, we had heard so much through the years, and Lord knows, since being
right.
in radio since 1976, I have heard
right.
this in varying formats. What you never want to do is have a train wreck. And that,
right.
by definition, is a song that has no right to follow the mood that you just created with the one before
right.
it.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, they're
right.
mood destroyers. They're vibe killers.
Yes.
So you never want to have that happen. And you might have had a whole different set of feels, like
yeah.
different genres, different moods. But it's so fluid, the whole CD, that
yeah.
you just naturally groove to, wow, this is pretty cool right,
right
after what I just heard.
right. It took you up and it brought you there. It was just this gentleman who bought the CD, I think he was in Virginia, and he sent me this long email. And it blessed me so, because he said, you know, listening to this CD, he said, I was able to connect with the musician, and I was able to see what she saw in her music.
Oh.
He was like, wow. That blew me away. I mean,
wow, that's
that
powerful.
Me. You know, he's like, he's just sitting in my car. He said, I was able to go through every song on this CD. He said, and I do mean every song on the CD and connect with every song. And I got a picture of this artist, and I just connected with her. And I was like, wow, God, look at that. Look at when you're obedient, look at what God can do, you know, through the music. And, you know, I mean, people, I know, I've got messages saying music lifted their spirits, made them feel better. You know, I know me, I've had that with my music as well as other people's music, because I can actually say that Brian McKnight, his song One Last Cry, has got me through a lot of heartbreak.
Oh.
breaking up, you know, break up. I put on that song, I cry through the night, but in the morning time, I'm healed. After listening to One Last Cry, I'm actually putting it on and just say it over and over again, over and over again. One Last Cry. And I would cry through the night. But in the morning when I woke up, it's like, okay, come on, let's move on. It's like, yeah.
How about that? You know what? He would, at this point in his life, honestly, he would love to hear that from you, and he needs to hear that from you, because he's going through some stuff right now.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
So promise me, make it a point to reach out to him, even if you have to reach out to him via Claude McKnight, because Claude's worried about Brian, too.
Really? My gosh.
Yeah.
I want to find a way if I can contact them, maybe through some of my contacts, to just let them know, you know, that your music over the years have blessed people and have healed people. It's done exactly what it was supposed to be.
He needs to hear that. Yep. Oh, my God, what you just said would mean the world of difference for him, especially you, because you would pray for the right words to say.
Right. Yes, definitely. Definitely. Oh,
my goodness.
He just needs to know that. That song ministered to me, you know. So, you know, thank God that, you know, he was obedient, you know, in that song and created that song. And he has a connection to the people to know that that song, you know, again, changes the atmosphere. That's our job as a musician, as singers. I include singers as musicians, to change the atmosphere with our music.
And Chrissy, honestly, the folks who may have known God at one point may have had a relationship with him, or folks who really never had a relationship. I think that I can say about Brian right now that he feels so underappreciated. He might feel that his work has been in vain.
Wow. I'm going to try to reach him on Twitter and just let him know. My God.
Yeah. That's good. And, boy, that's bold of me to say that. But that's what I'm picking up from Claude, and that's what I picked up from Brian, because he actually was on the Tom Joyner show a couple of weeks ago. And Jay and Sybil and Tom were shaking their heads wondering what was going on.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the one thing we can't do. We can't let the enemy steal our joy.
That's right. And that's exactly what happens sometimes, you know. That whisper in your ear, you're worthless. Your work will never mean anything. Nobody cares about you.
Wow.
You know?
Crazy.
Woo! Well, I know.
It's
crazy. Yeah. But that's how, you know, hell eats at you and eats at you. Sooner or later, that whisper becomes a scream.
Right. And you can't deaden that in your head.
Right.
Like, you know.
It's got to be nipped in the bud. You got to surround yourself with people who get it, who just pray that thing out of you. So.
Yes.
Well, listen, tell us what is going on. I mean, the chart thing trips me out.
Woo! Yes, it trips me out too. Yes. Let me tell you, it actually blew me away to know. The first thing was like, I didn't, you know, when we got the notice, as my manager and I, that we had charted on All About Jazz, we were like stoked. We were like, yeah, you know. And that the charting grew and grew and grew till we made number one. And,
insanity.
You know, when we got the call, we were like, he said, look, we're so excited. This has never, ever happened before that you guys charted number one. The review of your CD charted number one. He said, out of, you know, all of the artists, signed artists, you know, you're the only independent artist or unsigned artist that has ever charted number one. And it was like, he said, this has never happened to before, and that they were ecstatic. I mean, I'm looking at it now, there's so many other people on here that kind of, you know, looking at them, like,
superstar.
Some of them, yeah, just, oh, my God, just everybody. Sydney Bechet, oh, my God, I'm looking at it. Ahmad Jamal, and these are all, I'm like, oh, my God, I am in the category with this one, Hal Galper, this one, Chihira Yamanaka.
Gesundheit.
Yeah, right. Legendary bassist Donald Duck Dunn. And it talks about, you know, when he had right passed away. I mean, just everything that we actually placed number one over all of these stories and articles, that we were number one. And then, so that we heard about that, you know, he called and he said, you know, I just wanted to share with you all that peace of mind, being outside the line, the entire CD, not single track, but the entire CD is now being played on 18 stations around the world, and the stations are not all gospel, you know, like sacred stations. They're secular stations. They're playing your gospel music on secular stations. You know, we're like, wow, this blew And it was like, well, he said, not single tracks, the whole CD. And I'm sitting, and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm absolutely blown away. And then shortly after that happened, then I'm checking, and I see that Peace of Mind on Top of the Line has gone viral. It's being played in Germany, Japan, Czechoslovakia, in the Latin countries, France. It's just being played all over, and I'm like, wow, look what God did. And
exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I'm an independent artist. You know, it's like, wow. It's like, look at what God can do.
Exactly. And the folks who would have said, oh, this can't be done, you have the perfect right to say, you don't know my God.
That's right. You don't know what my God can do.
Oh, when you told me that, I thought, oh my,
yes.
Really? Because
it is a
struggle for an independent, unsigned artist. I mean, it's getting better now because actually people have thought outside the box to say, hey, you know what? I'm not signed. I'm independent. Therefore, I can do what I want to do and nobody's breathing down my neck. But you have the added situation of being obedient to God, and look how he has rewarded you.
Oh my God, he is just absolutely, I mean, like, we turn around everywhere, and there is just the Lord you are, and you see, you know, the songs that are actually ministering to people, and it's like, you know what, I needed someone to say that to him. I needed someone to say, speak life over yourself, don't wait for somebody to tell you who you are.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Join faith with God about who you are. You are King's kid. You know what I'm saying? You have power and you know, of life and death in your mouth. You can speak things, and it shall happen. You have that power. Why are you waiting for somebody else to tell you? Why are you waiting for somebody to tell you that you are called, that you're special? Why are you waiting for someone when God has already told you you are a royal priesthood? You know, why are you trying to hide your uniqueness because you don't fit in with the group? I learned recently, and I thank God for this class that I took, that eagles don't flock.
Really?
Eagles don't flock. And as a leader, as a person, you know, you're going to stand. You're not going to be flocking for life. So why are you trying to fit into a group of people? When God says, I designed you, you know, I uniquely designed you to be a leader. So lead.
Well, you know what? One of my favorite verses from the New Testament is come out and be separate.
That's right. Come out from among them. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the idea. That's the idea that God gave me, why I came up with the name Peace of Mind Outside the Line, because I know that that's a long title for a CD. But this is the premise. Peace of Mind Outside the Line is we can be different. Now, the line is the world and the world's way of doing things and what the world thinks. That's the line. Okay. We ought to be operating outside the line. And while we're outside the line, have peace.
Mm. Right.
Be peace. You're outside the line because God said, I'm calling you out from among them. So I don't have to do what everyone else is doing, because God has called me from out of that. So when people are doing things that does not, you know, that like this, I believe that God has given us a directive that we are to love all men. I believe God has given us a directive that we are supposed to have forgiveness.
Right.
He gives us that. And he gives us the strength to be able to do it. That's being called out, because how many people in this world today have a difficulty with saying to someone that they have harmed or hurt, I'm sorry, my bad, please forgive me.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
You know, sometimes that's the hardest word for people to say is I'm sorry. But there's so much power behind that word, I'm sorry. So much power. You can set a person free by simply saying, I'm sorry. When a person has all this anger up in them and hurt, simply saying, I'm so sorry, will release them from that pain and that hurt and that anger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it can very well possibly save a nation by simply saying, I'm sorry.
Oh, yes, indeed.
You know, to say it's sorry. You know, but that gets power. It takes a powerful man and a woman to say, I'm sorry.
Oh.
It takes no strength. You know what I mean? It takes no strength to be mean and nasty and ornery. No strength at all.
Well, I mean, it goes hand in hand with the fact that we're commissioned to not only love the people who love us, because that's the easy part, but we're supposed to love our enemies.
Yep.
Now, if that's the case, we need to cultivate the enthusiasm of saying, I'm sorry.
Right.
Because that's the way that, it's just been so hard. It just seems like since 9/11, 2001, it just seems like people have regressed into this angry and sad and depressed and moody mode. And then, you know, it got to be even more so when Barack Obama became president. That's my perception, because it seemed as though some stuff that was poison was able to rise to the surface in ways that we don't understand.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we need to get back to the basic priority of thinking, you know what? This is a human being in front of me.
If
I do not have respect for this person, I don't have any God in me at all.
Right. Right. It's like, it's like, oh, my God, how can we not have compassion? You know, and let me say this is so funny, because I know a lot of people, some people may disagree with me, but I believe this, and, you know, and God has confirmed it. But I believe that God does not make any mistakes, and he has a unique way in how he gets us to have compassion. He has a unique way of how he gets us, you know, to come to him, a unique way of how he touches the innermost part of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, and without this, we would not, you know, consider those innermost parts. This is what I mean. You know, and sometimes this may be hard for some people to understand. A lot of people would ask me, why do you think God made people with disabilities? And I said, you know what? I believe that God did that so that, as my belief now, that God did that so that it would teach us, help us to learn compassion. And I give this example. If I'm driving down the street and it's a green light, I'm at an intersection, and a person comes out in front of me, I'm going to hit my brakes, but I'm going to also honk my horn. Like, blah, 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 blah. Get out the way. You know? Oh, yeah, can you? Just how my life was green, you know? People, this is people. But let's say if it's an elderly person or if it's a person in a wheelchair or whatever, and the same thing happens, what we would do is we would stop and slow down and let them cross the street.
Right.
Yeah. Why would we do that? Why would we have a difference for the two? See, we have compassion for the person that may be handicapped or have a disability, but we have no compassion for the regular person. Like, come on. Now, just imagine if everyone was a regular, you know, I mean, without, you know, disability or whatever. You know, people would have a hard time going to the innermost parts of them and pulling up their compassion for a person. Even
mm-hmm.
if someone has done something wrong, have done you wrong, you know, people have a hard time going in and finding that, in that innermost part of them, and finding that compassion for that person. Yeah, they did you dirty, dirty wrong. Yes, they did. But I know one thing for sure, that I know in my lifetime, and we all in our lifetime have done something that have hurt someone, whether it was intentional or not intentional, and we want that same compassion extended unto us. So I have a right to do that. I have a right to go into the innermost parts of me, pull up that compassion, whether they have a disability or not. And I thank God for teaching me about that.
Well, you know what? The fact of the matter is that we have believed too much of what the world says is perfect. God's version, his idea of what perfect is, includes everybody that's made.
Right, everybody. Right.
You know, you are perfect the way you are, and, you know, inside of you is something that is so special. Each of us has these different gifts that we bring, and anything that we can do to let little children know when they are very young that the world is not made to merely tolerate but to embrace everybody.
Yes.
Not just tolerate, but love everybody, because there's a whole lot of people that are all different than you. And isn't that wonderful?
Yes. I like different flavors of Kool-Aid. Yes, I do.
Yes. And as I have said about different kinds of men, God made different kinds of flowers. And isn't it just beautiful to see them all?
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Jesus. Well, look, I know I kept you over. And here's what I want to do. I want to be able to end the show when it ends promptly at 4 o'clock with In Flight, which is Will Allen's song. So I wanted to end our interview with Sam's Place because of just what you have spoken about, the fact that music can create the healing, and that, you know, even the very elite among us, we are all the same, whether it's somebody who lives in poverty in a trailer, or whether it's somebody who lives in a castle or a mansion. Music is the great equalizer.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Yep.
It will. It will. It will. Oh, my God. Yes.
And actually, our chat room has asked a question from you, the folks that are local, especially Miss Yolanda Bell. She wants to know where she can see you next. Is there some place local that we can see you next if we missed you last night?
Let's see. Let me look at my schedule. I know that we've got a couple of private performances coming up.
I know you do.
I know, and I'm like, oh, my God. I know June 16th. I'm in Virginia at the Fort McNair Officers Club, doing an event there for some a military staff there.
Oh.
June 23rd, I'm at Club du Jour in Turf Valley. It's June 23rd.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that, I'm not sure if that's a private
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure, but I'll check on that one. I know on July 13th, I'm going to be at the Kennedy Center doing the culmination of, I'm going to Artist in Residency program during the summer in July, or 2 weeks in July, where I'm working with some kids. And the closures, we do a performance at the Kennedy Center on July the 13th.
Oh, I know about that workshop. That's great.
Yeah. I'll be doing that. I'll also be at the Dorsey Convention in August, doing August the 6th, I'll be there. And I know I've got some other dates, and I'm just trying to find out. There's some more dates here in June that I'm going. I'm going June 10th, actually, out of the church. June 10th, I'm in D.C. at a church. Right, that's this Sunday coming. And then June the, and this is not on my calendar yet.
You've added dates.
Yes, dates are constantly being added. I think I'm telling you about the extreme tour that we'll be doing.
Yes.
And that tour goes from June through October, so we'll be in and out. I believe we're going to be on the East Coast tour. I think we do go through Canada, and pull that up.
Honestly, you're going to go to Canada?
Yes. Well, what happens is the extreme tour, we decide the number of dates that we can do. So right now, what we're trying to do is combine the dates with dates that we already have on our book to see if we can make them work. So if, when we're here, can we make it from here, well, from this location to this location, and be financially sound as well as capable to happen? So it's been kind of crazy trying to coordinate that piece.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that tour from Canada starts on my birthday, July 30th. And that was in Winnipeg. So we're still trying to coordinate those dates that we can do with them and dates that we already have set in the calendar. I know I'm in New Jersey in August. I know I have a date in June here in Baltimore. I just have to find out that date, and that will be actually on the Extreme Tour. We'll be here in Baltimore.
You are making my head spin. I'm just going to have to find out where you are and then post it on my page.
Yes. As soon as I get all, as soon as I get the dates updated, you know you and I speak all the time, but I can send that over to you so folks can come out. People are still calling us, you know, about getting even locally. I'm trying to get back into some of these clubs here in Baltimore because I don't want them to forget me and know that, you know, I started here with, you know, when I moved back to Baltimore, one of the first clubs I played at was at 347. So we're trying to get back in there and a few other locations here locally that we're trying to get into to let them know, hey, you know, we're here, we're still, you know, doing what we're doing. It's a matter of coordinating.
Look,
you know?
if you want me to call them and say, you better get her now, because this time next year, I'm afraid that's going to be happening. I'm a little scared about this now. I really am, because, I mean, if you're getting played in multiple countries, I think that you're going to be touring outside the country a lot next year.
Yeah. I'm getting that same feeling, because it's like, wow, I'm just getting this contact from all over. And it's like, wow. It's like,
man,
look at what God is doing. I'm like, okay, when you go online, you read, what does that say? It's in French. What does that say?
and honestly, Chrissy, it's just so weird because, you know, the album came out and there was a big buzz, and then there was a little bit of a lull, and now it's popping.
Yes, it's just hot. As they say, it's hot and popping. I'm like, okay, Lord.
Man,
yes,
okay.
Awesome.
I hope you got your running shoes packed, girl. That's all.
Honey.
Whoa, this is awesome. Oh, my God. Well, I'm so glad you had the time to talk, because I didn't know how tired you were going to be from last night. Man, so thank you.
It was awesome. I thank you for having me on, just to be able to speak to everybody. Let them know I love, you know, the people of Baltimore. You know, there are other stuff coming out. We got the movie, which is It Has Begun. That's going to be coming out on the national. We released it locally, but we're in the works of getting the movie out on the national level.
Oh, good.
And that movie, the movie's called It Has Begun. And, you know, the documentary movie, which is absolutely awesome. We're working on some other movies. And we're getting ready to shoot a music video here in Baltimore so we can blow up Baltimore.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. I actually just got the paperwork today that we're trying to put that all together here in Baltimore. You know, we need to blow up Baltimore and say, hey, there's great talent, there's great love coming out of the city of Baltimore. You know,
that's right.
We love this music called jazz, and we cannot let it die. We will not let it die. You know, they may have taken us off of the main, you know, frame on the radio, but thank God for your show and other shows like yours that are keeping it alive, and it shall.
Oh, but there's no question. Oh, Chrissy, look, there's no doubt that God put us, you and I, together specifically because you and I have been fuel for each other, and thank God you have been there in a couple of places where you've really literally talked me down from the ledge. Hallelujah. I'm serious. Let the record show that Corinthia Cromwell talked me down from the ledge a couple of times. And that could be a movie all by itself. But here's the thing. The thing is that there will be a radio station. I truly believe this more and more, that you were put in this particular scenario for not only you, but for what you are able to do for other people. And what you have done for me is to fuel that desire even more, to make that hybrid radio station come to pass so that people will be able to grasp how important the genre of jazz is. You really have been instrumental in this.
Yes. Oh my God. I thank God for allowing me to be, you know, to say yes. I'm a part of it. I'm in the number. You know, he said, "Who gonna do it?" I was, I do it.
And God meanwhile is in heaven, and God's got his lieutenants, and God's going, is that Chrissy raising her hand again?
Right. Yes, God, I hear him saying that. Is that Chrissy again?
And it's just like a teacher in front of class going, okay, somebody else beside Chrissy, raise your hand, all right?
Yes.
Oh, I love you, girl.
Yes, I love you too, Mom. And let me say this, that for those of you that are listening here, Trish is what I call the voice of victory. You know, the very time that I met her, the very first time that I met her, and we met at that concert, the Marion Meadows and Wayne and Sister concert.
Yeah.
The very minute you spoke, it was like I felt just this wave go through me. And I knew from that very moment that we were going to be connected. But I also knew that your voice was to be heard around the world, and it will be heard around the world.
Oh, wow.
And it was like that was confirmed in my spirit, like, wow, God. And it is so, that you are the voice of victory. You understand what I'm saying? I'm
you.
I
do.
The voice of victory.
God bless
you. You hear me? It's like, my God, it's like, you're open, because there's so many people that have been closed off to certain styles of music. But just showing people, you can listen to jazz and still love God, and God will still love you. Because like, He will still love you. You can listen to this, and God's still going to love you, because it's about the quality of your heart. And your heart, because you've got the biggest heart. Oh, my God. Even when people have despitefully use you, your heart still stays open. You know what I'm saying? And that is a blessing within itself. And God's going to honor you for that.
You are so good. From your lips, that means everything. So thank you.
Yes, God. You are so welcome. Thank you. All of y'all, the voice of victory, that's what she is. The voice of victory.
And you are being used so mightily that it's almost scary to think of what's going to happen next, and scary in the best way. Oh, my God. Every day there is another situation happening with you. So I'm just standing back, and I know you're doing that too, to just let it happen organically and let God decide how best to use you next.
Amen. Yeah, I'm letting him do it. I just say yes. That's it. Yes and amen. And amen. And I encourage everybody else.
You'll never talk that little, Chrissy.
Yeah.
You'll never be a woman of minimum speaking.
That's for sure.
I love it. And we're going to close this off with Sam's Jam, because that is a victorious song.
Yes. Definitely, yes, victorious song. And think victory when you hear this song, think victory.
And actually, this is how much I think of you. I'm going to play this song, and the song right after it is going to be Lil Hardin Armstrong, who is one of the godmothers of jazz.
Yes.
And you, Corinthia Cromwell, has the right to be back-to-back with Lil Hardin Armstrong.
I know that's right. I receive that. I receive it.
Receive it.
I receive it from you. Yes.
I have loved it, and I know people in the chat room have loved it, and people who are going to hear this in the archives, and we will make sure people know where you're going to play locally or wherever else.
That sounds great. Thank you so much. And I'm agreeing with Yolanda here. She said, I agree with Corinthia. Trish has the biggest heart. Yes, I agree with you, Yolanda, right now. I'm reading it in the chat room. Yes. Yes, yes.
Oh, and bless both of your hearts.
DM Rock says, I agree with that, Yolanda. Yes, I agree with you. Yes, I'm in agree.
There's a lot of agreement in the chat room right now. I'm telling you. Oh, my God. Well, go rest those vocal cords, and we're going to make sure that we close out the rest of the show with something real special.
Thank you so much. Love you, Bailey.
Love you, too.
All right, folks. Have a great day.
Corinthia Cromwell, let me tell you something. I just want to jump into this so much. This is Sam's Jam from Peace of Mind Outside the Lines. This CD is smoking globally, and that is just so awesome to think about the journey to get to this place. If you knew about Chrissy getting to the place where this was released, you would be weeping right now. Gosh, here we are on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Forgot the name of the show for a second here. I'm so excited.
Thank you.
Holy smoke! It's a Greg Adams double play. Oh my gosh! You know what? What's the word to use? It's just such a credit, but there's more to the word than that for Greg Adams to realize that being a part of Tower of Power back then, the year was 1973. Lord have mercy. Here's how much of an impression as a founding member of Tower of Power Greg Adams was able to make. Even though he's not with the group now, doesn't make any difference. The impact that he had over that horn section then was of such magnitude that here I am, I'm with T on the weekend at the Cap Jazz Fest, Soul Stage, here's Tower of Power 2012, right? So Emilio and Doc are still with the group, and by the way, Roger Smith is playing piano for T.O.P., and here's Larry Braggs doing a great job on the vocals. But what is just so significant is that black, white, yellow, red, middle-aged, old, young, don't make no difference. Everybody's singing the words to the song. So happy, 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 happy. Everybody knew Tower of Power songs. So Very Hard to Go, You're Still a Young Man, This Time It's Real. Oh, What Is Hip? Oh, did they cook with that song? It was just nuts. Man alive. So thank you, Greg, for years of good memories. I just love you. I know I'm speaking for all of the chat room. And we also heard, by the way, East Bay Soul from 2.0. We heard Brassalicious, one of the coolest songs ever. And you can find out what's happening at gregadamsmusic.com, but forget it, I'll tell you. All right, know that Greg is going to be at Spaghettini's. When is it? I just had it down here. Okay, yeah, the 3rd and the 4th of August. And he's going to be at Scullers in Boston the last day of December, actually the 30th and the 31st of December. There's going to be more dates, but I wanted to tell you about those two because they're pretty significant. There's just renewed love for Greg Adams and East Bay Soul now. Everybody can attest to that. And it was so much fun. I have to point this out the other day. Andrea Adams, who is doing such a great job at overseeing husband Greg's scenario, this renaissance of what's happening with Greg and company. Andrea and Diamond Gore, another friend on Facebook, and Ann Gore, no relation, we're all talking back and forth. We're on this Barack Obama post, and we're all fans. So we thought this would be really cool if this was a sitcom because of the silly things that we were saying. So I thought, okay, maybe we could have like a TV show that is all about a musical moving company called Barack and Roll, and Greg could be the boss, and Diamond and Ann and I could be the ladies who really do run the office. It would just be cool. It's just a cool concept. So Andrea said she's in, and I think Diamond and Ann said they're in too. If it comes to pass, you heard it here first. Lil Hardin Armstrong is who we heard, and her orchestra. I could talk all day about this woman, second wife of Louis Armstrong, but so much more than that. Jazz pianist, composer, arranger, singer, band leader, she was the shiggity. You will know the song Bad Boy, hit for Ringo Starr, 1978. Lil Hardin Armstrong wrote that song. She was born in 1898. She passed away in 1971. Fisk University in Nashville. She was so good so early at the piano that she got to work at the Jones Music Store as a sheet music coordinator or demonstrator. And Jelly Roll Morton came into the store. Her world got turned around. In turn, she got so good being inspired by Jelly Roll that she became a member of King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band, who in turn hired Louis Armstrong And Lil oversaw a lot of reasons why he became so successful. She turned that country boy around, got him into a more citified mode, and the rest is history. There is amazing history behind this woman. This is from what you heard is, and I thought of my friend Beach here, BJ. The name of the song you heard was East Town Boogie. And I wanted to play East Bay Soul back-to-back with that. From the album Chicago, the Living Legends, as somebody said, she was present at the creation of those living legends. She is one formidable talent, and I'm going to play some more of her down the road. But I want to play two more songs now because I promised, and one of the songs I'm not going to get to is by a wonderful artist, Tommy Cecil, who has played with Mose Allison and Charlie Bird and Shirley Horn. He has a brand new CD out with his friend Bill Mays on piano, and it's called Side by Side Sondheim Duos. And we're going to get to that next time around because I want to focus more on Tommy. But I promise to play this just because of the fact that in 2 days, it's Ken Navarro's birthday. You need to hear this song. This is Imagine from Ken Navarro's The Test of Time. Please listen.
Thank you.
much for joining us. We'll see you Tuesday on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy at 5 p.m., okay? That was Chrissy Cromwell. God bless you. Be safe over the weekend.